Beaver and the People, a Muskoka Nimishilian Walk by Noam Kasha Schilling. Today, forest management policy across Turtle Island, that is North America, focuses on frequent and large-scale disruption paradigms. The sighting and scale of forest disruption practices in the Algonquian Northeast do not match millennia of indigenous stewardship. Agencies and forestry employees devote great effort to promoting narratives that call for disruption of forests at various scales and stages across landforms. Agency and social media claims about Northeastern indigenous stewardship of pre-colonial forests conflict with traditional narratives, with documentary and archaeological evidence on indigenous culture, and with geological evidence such as soil sediment pollen records. In Algonquian homelands from Mahicanhituk, the Hudson River in New York, to Piscataquis, Piscataqua River in New Hampshire and Maine, several lines of evidence show that fire and other forest clearing were not widespread or landscape-changing activities across most of the region through many millennia. From a key research paper on this topic, I quote, "Pollen data indicate closed forests from 8,000 years before the present to the onset of European deforestation. Though Algonquian roots and cultivation of foods like sunflowers, gourds, sumpweed, and goosefoot reach back several millennia, ancient plots were too small to significantly alter the landscape. Regional studies of indigenous impacts on living communities show evidence for a small-scale fire on Kutanakish, which are horticultural plots, close to the main Utan Odan or town, the Lenape, Nipmuc, and Wabanaki historic and current terms for village or town, for example, Odana, Quebec. When we look for processes that create cycles of succession and promote biodiversity, our thoughts should center on beaver. People and beaver have deep connection in Quinnetiquook, the Connecticut Valley, including its tributaries. In the late Pleistocene days of the people living on this land, now extinct giant beaver, Castoroides ohioensis, more than 2 meters long and 100 kilos in weight, dwelt in abundant post-glacial wetlands amid dense taiga forests. Traditional narratives of central Connecticut remember giant beaver and fast floods. Mokamisk, known as Giant Beaver, is said to have blocked the Connecticut River at Amisquatamac, meaning beaver dams between Pequannock and Enfield, Connecticut, and to have terrorized the people, but Hobomok, Manitou, battled Giant Beaver and released the waters. Like many formative histories, this narrative also ties landscape features to those events. Mokamisk remains as Sugarloaf's two mountains extending to the longer Pocumtuck Ridge in South Deerfield and Deerfield, Massachusetts. And the fight formed three islands nearby in the river, Matamacket, Alinacook, and Tohkanakokwis, now known as First, Second, and Third Islands. Wabanaki and Mi'kmaq share similar narratives about battles with a giant beaver and a hero or manito breaking the dam. As I heard it, Saking, Anishinaabeking, and other Ojibwe hero, Nanabojo, and grandmother Nokomis, have a conflict with giant Wabamik, with whom they have been tracking across the Great Lakes and discover a giant dam at Anaros, which is linked to the formation of islands in what is now known as Georgian Bay. Amisquatamac lies upstream from the dam in the glacial lake at Rocky Hill, Connecticut. Once Hobomok defeated Mokamisk, Witam Manitou sent clear water from the cascades of Kunquachu, which means tallest mountain, also known as Mount Toby Massif in Sunderland, Massachusetts, into the valley, and the relationship between the people and beaver was forever changed. Like some other giant beasts in Algonquian traditions, such as squirrels among the Lenape, the once giant predatory beaver became smaller relatives who provide food themselves to humans. From the formative story of the Connecticut Valley, there came to be three major land types, Miskeketash, Nunavok, Tawakomok, each holding several types of living and working spaces. Beaver live in Miskeketash, freshwater wetlands, defined in early negotiations with colonists for the area's Mkioskwitash. The people lived on land described by the term Nunavok or Nunavoki, drained or good land. Nunavok is where we find Otanek, villages in Kotanakish, planted lands, and fishing places and hunting bases. Upland forests were recognized in the term Tawakumuk, open or unallotted area, which are also the location for stone prayers and rock shelters. Tawakumuk are lands where spirituality, hunting, and collecting take place within traditional ceremonial restrictions such that the footprint of indigenous people through millennia is difficult to detect. Because animals and plants are considered relatives to humans, and taking them is considered an act of involving spiritual helpers and prayer, all of these lands are basically ritual and spiritual in character. By damming streams and clearing nearby woody plants for varying periods of time, beaver drive ecosystem dynamics and succession at small scale. Cyclic abandonment of beaver ponds coupled with human hunting provided abundant small-scale successional habitat and an eating pace without the shock of modern management tactics. Beaver dams and ponds across riparian zones trapped nutrients, thus likely aiding in the development of localized mesic soils and overall enrichment, while controlling eutrophy, reducing siltation, and increasing biodiversity. Beaver leave the land richer than they find it. As demonstrated by the lucrative beaver pelt trade in early colonial times, beaver were abundant compared to today. The Northeast holds numberless small valleys and impoundable streams. Beaver likely surpassed people in terms of small-scale temporal impacts on habitat and on adaptative behaviors of dependent species. Beaver are central to land stewardship models that focus on the continuity of deep legacy and ecology. Hunted by martens, wolves, humans, raptors, and sometimes otters, the interactive dynamics between beaver and their animal relatives must be considered. Beaver meat and pelts have always held great value. Their remains are frequent at early native places in the Connecticut Valley. From the Naskapi of Metchouillat in the Lac Saint-Jean region of Quebec, I heard narratives often featuring beaver hunts, such as Mamateu has a hairy heart, and Metsu talks to oneself, in which a variety of hunting methods are described. Traditional hunting of beaver necessarily influenced prey abundance and behavior, making for a dynamic of cycles with many variables. Millennia of indigenous caretaking of this relationship made possible the colonial beaver pelt trade and the extracted wealth of the region in general. Today, all has changed greatly on this land. Estimates by the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals place the Massachusetts beaver population as stable at about 70,000. Even this large number is greatly short of historical population estimates and the numbers of beaver needed to reestablish those processes that created the rich pre-colonial landscape. Meanwhile, management of beaver sometimes frustrates habitat restoration. In Massachusetts, problem beavers cannot by law be relocated, despite the great need for them elsewhere to restore and maintain habitat that includes endangered species. Kunkwatsu, Montaubi Massif in Sunderland and Leverett, Massachusetts, is a sacred home of Witumanidu, and a good example of a location where beaver are needed to support rare species. Here, on a small perched muskeg that historically supported beaver, several rare or common plants, the state's last Showy's lady slippers, Cypripedium reginae, a group of threatened large-leaved orchid, Platanthera macrophylla, a population of eyelash-fringed orchid, Platanthera blepharoglottis, and suppressed Turk's cap lily, Lilium superbum, are shaded by overhanging trees. Nearby, dwindling away, are the last of ram's head lady slippers in the state of Massachusetts, Cypripedium marietinum. Due to the lack of wooded stream corridors to the mountain, beaver have not yet recolonized the area. Government agencies publicly claim that trapping is needed to control beaver, amplified by sensationalist fictions like The Beavers That Ate Massachusetts, a wild exaggeration in sports afield. Beaver reproduction responds effectively to changing conditions and population size, with females conceiving at a younger age when the population is culled. Agencies and hunter groups blame animal cruelty restrictions and low, quote, social carrying capacity for beaver woes, which arise largely due to suburban sprawl. Animal cruelty organizations complain that leghold traps are inherently cruel, while trappers complain that humane traps are expensive. Having witnessed how an otter can attack a leg-held beaver overnight, I can attest to the incredible suffering and extended cruelty of that fate. Indigenous hunting methods include snares, but also several other less cruel methods, such as those described in the traditional narratives above and in the living memory archives of nations like the Iyu, also known as Eastern Cree. A traditional method I saw is winter hunting, where beaver are chased into their lodge, then the entrance is blocked, and the beaver are trapped inside. The lodge is opened from the top, and the beaver can be humanely dispatched. Another method was to collect the anal gland fluid from a caught male beaver, and then scent mark heavily onshore near the targeted beaver, then dispatching that animal when it comes to investigate. Agencies have not sought better methods from indigenous knowledge keepers. Published arguments on policy do not explore methods other than leghold traps, which are cruel, and cage traps, which are expensive and less effective. Efficiency and responsiveness of both indigenous people and beaver achieved balance with their relatives and their environment. Algonquian nation housing is sustainable. Heat-efficient, dome-roofed wigwams, densely inhabited and small, interestingly like beaver lodges. The house consisted only of 7 main saplings and usually fewer than a dozen smaller saplings, fiber ties, and either mat covers or bark, all locally renewable by allowing saplings to grow over the site between rebuilds. Compare a wigwam to the wood needed to build one European-style house. Indigenous people also stayed only part of the year at each place, reducing the negative impacts and creating positive impacts. Our impacts were light and restricted to particular terrain under traditions that harmonize with the ways of beaver tending their land. Indigenous stewardship maintained a level where indigenous lifeways continued deep evolutionary history. Absent drivers like profit and empire building, the skill and insight of our lifeways preserved abundance. Beavers alter their living spaces slowly, selectively, with preference for the best sites, leaving other lands unaltered. Their stewardship is embedded in their lifeways and local to their homes. Beaver, fish, various landfowl, waterfowl, and small mammals competed with deer in prominence in the pre-colonial diet, yet these do not receive proportional focus in land management plans. Land management needs to reduce the area of human disturbance while restoring beaver to our streams. Management staff committed to disturbance regimes can be retrained to trap and relocate beaver to their former homes away from suburbs. A more detailed and more localized image of indigenous lifeways is the necessary basis for successful conservation and ecological management policy. Those details are available through indigenous narrative, archaeology, soil studies, and comparative botanical evolution studies, where AMISC, beaver, is the lead figure.